Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Dennis Lehane is the author of 12 novels, including the best-selling Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, and Shutter Island, which were also made into Hollywood blockbusters. His latest is World Gone By. In it, Lehane continues the epic story of Joe Coughlin, who made his debut in The Given Day and continued in Live by Night. In the new novel, Coughlin navigates the criminal underworld of Florida as World War II rages on overseas. Coughlin soon discovers he has his own treacherous war lurking much closer to home. It's a great pleasure to welcome Dennis Lehane to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. Great pleasure as always.
Oh, thanks for having me, Joe.
Was it always the decision to stay with this character, to stay with this story through now three novels?
No, I don't think it was a decision. It was sort of an organic process. As I wrote The Given Day, I knew that some point I wanted to ultimately write this gangster novel I'd wanted to write since I was a little kid. And midway through The Given Day, there was a scene with Joe in it, and I said, there's my gangster. He has the right biography to become a gangster. So then I moved him into Live by Night. Finished Live by Night, and I don't know, shortly after I finished it, I think he's got one more tale in him. I want to see him as an older man. I want to see him confronting fatherhood.
So this book is 10 years later, 10 years since the tragedy that took place in the last novel, and he's starting to build a new life for himself in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, he's gotten to a pretty enviable position in the world that he's in. He has stepped down as a boss. He has become a consigliere. He navigates pretty fluidly the world between the illegitimate, which is the mafia world that he's in, and the legitimate, which is Tampa society. And so he is kind of a man about town when we meet him. And he's got a 10-year-old son. He's widowed. But he seems to be in control of everything, which is the moment when most people lose control. And that was my interest. What happens when the ground begins to shift beneath your feet? And I think to some extent that is he's 37, which in his day was middle-aged. And I think that is a little bit, I was seeing a lot in terms of my life and my friends' lives that was, wow, plates shift in middle age. Things happen that just when you thought, okay, now I'm at the point where I've put it all together like a Viagra commercial, that's when things start kind of getting a little twisted and the ground turns into quicksand. And so that's what this book is. The first thing that happens is he notices what he believes ultimately is a ghost. He's visited by this strange small boy whose clothes are about 20 years out of date. And then he hears a rumor that somebody plans to assassinate him, which makes no sense. Everybody agrees. Everybody within his circle agrees. This makes no sense. This would be killing the golden goose. And yet you have to take that type of rumor very seriously. And he begins to investigate it. And that's really the engine that drives the book.
It is the engine that drives the book. And there's also the time clock. The clock is ticking.
Yes. They tell him that the rumor is that he will be assassinated on Ash Wednesday. And the book begins 1 week before Ash Wednesday.
So he has limited time to figure out who is trying to kill him and why.
Yes.
What I love about this novel and what I love about the past works is that this is a character, Joe Coughlin, who is able to really make a lot out of not much. in the sense that he has come from pretty much nothing, but then is able to eventually comes the money and the influence and the relationships and bringing a pretty good life for himself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's where he's at when we find him.
What fascinates you about a character like that?
Oh, I don't think it's hard to see autobiographical detail in that, the way you just described it. it's certainly, I come from a working class background, and I have done pretty well for myself. So a thing that continually surprises me. So, yeah, I think that there's probably a lot of me in that part of Joe Coughlin.
And in writing that, are you looking at it? Are you exploring it? Are there questions that you want to answer in that? Or are you mining in some respects what you've already gone through?
The one thing I understood about myself early, which was a wonderful thing to understand, is I'm a terrible autobiographical writer. I am. I'm awful. So I don't write direct autobiographical fiction like some people who do it quite well. I am extremely oblique. And a lot of times I'll sense that I'm working something out in my life through a book, but I won't go directly at it. I just will not even investigate it. I'll be like, huh, okay, I'm going to trust this feeling. I'm going to keep going with this. I don't know why I'm obsessing with this right now, but I'm going to keep obsessing over it. But I'm never going to make the connection to my own past, because then I'll get into autobiography, and I do that very badly. And so, yeah, are there parallels? Are there things going on with Joe that were going on with me? Certainly. I know that this is a book that is inordinately concerned with mortality. It's on just about every single page of the book. And I was losing a lot of people in my life at the points of which I began the book and by the time I finished it. So I've reached that age. We've reached the age where we're starting to bury our parents.
And because of that, again, going back to the exploration of looking that, and while not autobiographical, does it help you in some way to understand and work through things? Do you see a result of writing a novel like that?
No. Yeah. No, I'll be honest with you. No. It'll occur to me years later. I'll go, oh, that's what I was doing. Oh, interesting. Or I'll look back and go, how did you not see that? But usually in the moment, all I have is, again, that very vague sense that I'm playing around in the emotional minefield of my own psyche. But I don't know exactly how.
What brought you and this character to Florida?
Rum. Mm. When I first decided I wanted to do a gangster novel, I said, well, don't just go and write a pastiche. Don't just go and write an homage. Do something that hasn't been done. And everybody has done whiskey. And at that point, I knew Boardwalk Empire was – I had no association with it at that point. But I knew that Boardwalk Empire was coming, and I knew that that was connected to New Jersey. And so that's whiskey. And we've seen the gangster books set in Detroit and Kansas City and New York. And I said, I want to do something that hasn't been done. And then I realized rum. Nobody's really done the Latin tinged 1920s prohibition gangster book. And that's what led me to Tampa, because the rum route went from Havana, offloaded in Tampa, specifically in a part of Tampa called Ybor City, and then crossed Florida and then went up the coastline. And that was the rum route. And so I said, I'm going to do the rum route in reverse. I'm going to have my character start in Boston, and he's going to spend the middle of the book in Tampa, and he's going to ultimately end up in Havana. So that was Live by Night. And then 10 years later, where is he? What is he doing? What is his relationship with his son? And who is this little ghost who just pops up in his life? And that's what really was the inciting incident for this novel, for World Gone By.
Does the Cuban connection fascinate you?
No, and only insofar that Cuba is Cuba's just – I find Cuba very sexy. I find Cuba – I find decaying cities in the tropics to be kind of sexy. So there was that. And then there is the Cuban connection, if you will, there's a lot of people who will draw a direct, not a direct, I shouldn't say a direct line, but can draw a clear line from Operation Underworld, which was the very first time that naval intelligence, the U.S. government, reached out to the American mafia, and the Kennedy assassination. And so I started with Operation Underworld, and it shows up in this book under a different guise. And that was a case in which the United States was losing a lot of ships to German saboteurs, and yet they couldn't infiltrate the waterfront to stop them, because every time they tried to get a guy in there, the mafia, which controlled the waterfront, would basically beat the guy up to within an inch of his life and send him back. So finally, the naval intelligence approached the mafia. It was actually in New York. And they said, help us thwart German sabotage on the waterfront. And the mafia said, fine, as long as you release Charlie Luciano from Dannemora. And that was a side deal the government cut. And as soon as World War II was over, Lucky Luciano was released from Dannemora and deported to Italy.
In a novel like this, when you write about Joe Coughlin, is this a character, especially in the third installment, that you feel in without giving anything away, that this is a character that you're hoping to find some closure for?
I don't think it's that simple for me. I rarely know what I'm doing when I start a book. I have a vague sense of where it's going. But it's funny, because when he was alive, Elmore Leonard and I talked about this once. We had a very similar process. We would create a character, and then we would have that character meet another character, and then have those two characters meet a third character. And at some point, we would say to those characters, now go find me a plot. And they're usually really cool about it. They go out and then come back a couple of weeks later and they have a plot for you. But that's my process. So I didn't know where necessarily this book was heading. I knew physically where it was going to end. And I had a strong sense of how it was going to end. But in the end, I was completely wrong.
I know you and I have discussed this in the past, but I find it interesting because I'm a huge fan of the Kenzie Gennaro series, and I remember a point before the last novel in that series where you were really struggling. You were somewhat reluctant to write another book in that series. Was that ever the case here? Was it the idea of writing a series, or was it those particular characters?
I never felt that these books were a series. I feel like they're loosely connected. They're connected by a bloodline. But I don't think that to enjoy Live by Night, you have to read The Given Day.
Right.
And I don't think to enjoy World Gone By, you have to read or even know about Live by Night. The idea was that they would just, not quite at this level of artistry, to be honest, but the ideal was William Kennedy's Albany novels. In the ways in which the Phelan clan interact and they cross over into various other books.
Right.
And somebody who was a major character in one book, say, is a very minor character in the next. That, and then that the books took place over a large period of time. That appealed to me. And that was, I think, the model I had, if you will.
For the
idea of the sort of aesthetic ideal of these books, that it be about the journey of America, sort of between the wars, if you will, and that I didn't know that I was going to push all the way into World War II. That just sort of happened. But and that be it. And I use whatever was at my disposal from the canvas I started with The Given Day. So at one point there were plans to bring back Luther Lawrence from The Given Day. And other points, there were plans to show a much different journey that Danny Coughlin went on, Joe's older brother. But in the end, Joe just he took it and ran with it.
And of course, using the William Kennedy model of Legs and Billy Fallon's Game and Ironweed, of course, just to name a few, that was an entire world, and there were these characters, and so there's something in creating that world, I assume, that there's always something that you can go back to that would be of interest to you.
Yeah, that is really attractive to me. That now that these books for the moment are done, I'm writing a contemporary novel right now. But there is a part of me that thinks, oh, what happened to so and so, and where, what happened to the bloodline of so and so, and the descendants of so and so, and that allows me to, you know, should I choose to write my own version of Very Old Bones, to use just one example,
right?
Well, yeah, I could pick up on the Coughlins in the 1960s or the 1970s. That's a possibility, or not. But I like that I've stocked the bench in these books. So there's plenty of people to go and revisit, should I ever choose to, in my dotage.
Dennis Lehane is our guest. His new novel, his 12th, is World Gone By. It's published by Morrow. So talking about the series of Kenzie and Gennaro, was I correct in my saying that there was a point where there was some reluctance of continuing that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They had, the only way I can put it, this is the only part of my personality that's very arty, is I can only write about characters when they are banging on the door of my skull and saying, let us in. Otherwise, I don't do well going fishing for them. And so with Patrick and Angie, they just stopped talking to me. They stopped talking to me for 10 years. And there was nothing I could do about it. And I had other stories to tell. And they just, couldn't I fit them in, they didn't want to be found. I used to picture them in a motel room for some reason. And the phone would ring and they'd say, don't pick it up, it's him. So that's what happened. And then for whatever reason... Well, actually, I found out in retrospect, I know exactly what the reason was, but in 2009 or late 2008, Patrick's voice just popped back in my head. And so I went with it. I just finished The Given Day. I said, oh, okay, I'll do a Patrick book now. And I did it, and it was a wonderful, wonderful joyride.
Yeah.
And now I don't know if he'll ever come back again. Maybe he will, maybe he won't.
You said you knew the exact moment of what caused it.
I knew in retrospect. I realized that the story he wanted to tell, Patrick is always I'm not a particularly topical writer, but Patrick is the closest I get. He's my zeitgeist voice. He's the one who comes in and says, this is bothering me right now. Without perspective, this is bothering me right now. And what I really wanted to write about was the effect of the 2008 meltdown on the working class.
Right.
And that's really what's going on in Moonlight Mile. After you get past all the, you know, the Russian gangsters and the car chases and the shootouts, it's a book about how did we get here.
When it comes to an idea, because you've had such success with Hollywood, is there a beat between the idea, the novel, and then, oh yes, this could work in this forum, or do they have to be completely separate projects?
They have to be completely separate until they're done. Until the book is done, I don't even remotely consider Hollywood. It's just a very different type of storytelling. So, you know, the easiest way to put it is, you know, a book is a form of active entertainment. You have to engage it, and a film is a form of passive entertainment. You just have to sit there. So when I write a book, I am actively engaging my reader. I'm telling a story. And I am targeting a person to hear that story, my imaginary reader, if you will. When I write a script, when I think of movies, I think of them in very technical terms. I'm writing a blueprint, and that blueprint is meant to be disseminated among the 140 to 200 people who will be involved in making this film, from the actors to the set designers to the sound design guys, everybody. And that's all the script is. It's their blueprint. And I just don't think of the two remotely the same. I just think there is a Grand Canyon level of bifurcation between them. And outside of narrative DNA. So I never think of them in the same breath.
I mentioned in the introduction Gone Baby Gone and Shutter Island and Mystic River, and these are all very successful films. And so what was it like then to do The Drop, where you're the screenwriter, and really in that case it was that story came first, right? The movie mm-hmm. came first.
Well, I had a short story.
Right.
Called Animal Rescue that I extrapolated from and created the screenplay, The Drop. It was exactly that process. It was a process in which I was writing and rewriting and consistently refashioning up until literally and I love this. This is a joyful process for me. The ending, we just were never satisfied with the ending. I think I wrote something like 13 or 14 versions of it. And just the last minute, like how do we wrap this baby up? And it got to the point where myself and Mikhail Roskam and Tom Hardy were walking around in the cold in Brooklyn with me scribbling things and all of us talking at the, you know, a mile a minute, trying to come up with an ending that worked for everybody, because Tom's a very instinctual actor and he's a very engaged actor. And he wanted the ending to be true to his character, who had gone on this long journey. So it was all the three of us. And I just had this great, I have this great memory I'll carry the rest of my life, literally scribbling those lines down on a street corner in Brooklyn in the cold. And then the next day we filmed it.
So you write it here and it comes out there.
And it comes out there, yeah.
And is that a process you would like to replicate?
I think the place for me, now that I'm in Los Angeles, obviously I'm doing a lot of film work, I'm doing a lot of television work. The home for me, in my opinion, is television, is, you know, premium cable television. That's where I feel a novelist, his strengths are most suited to a television show that goes 10 to 12 episodes a year for 5 years. And that's sort of where I'm drifting, in continuing to write novels. But that is more attractive to me than writing screenplays.
Do those two pursuits ever conflict with one another?
Writing novels and writing for TV?
Yeah.
All the time. All the time.
And mostly because of scheduling or because of ideas and the actual thought process?
Scheduling.
Yeah.
It's a scheduling issue. There's only so many hours in a day. And there's certainly a new wrinkle in the last 7-8 years is I have a wife who actually expects me to be present, which is insane, but she does. She expects me to actually be present in her life and in her children's life. And so I have to punch the clock. I have to close the clock out at 4 o'clock and I have to be home and I have to be present for my wife and my children. And until I met her and until I went down that path, I never distinguished between my working life and my personal life. It's just one just continually bled into the other.
Right.
And I think it's actually made me a better writer.
How so?
I get more done. I punch a clock. I go in and I am at my desk by 7:30 and I am doing my work because I know that there is an end date to it every day. And before it was kind of like, I'll work for a little bit. I'll play a little PlayStation. I'll go for a bike ride. I'll come back. I will have dinner. Then I'll work at night. And sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't. Where now it's regimented. And that forces me to actually do a lot of work.
And having talked to many journalists who have become novelists, to say that they have to take that, the guidelines that they had as journalists of the deadline, and use that in their writing life.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't have deadlines, I'd never produce anything. I think we'd be sitting here talking about the 4 books that I've written, not the 12. I mean, it's the only thing. In fact, historically, my agent or my editor would often trick me into finally delivering the book. And they had a good grab bag of tricks. But because otherwise, they know I'd still be perseverating over it. I'd still be obsessing. I can take one more pass. It's just, I don't know, it's the nature of my personality.
Dennis Lehane's new novel is World Gone By. It is published by Morrow. Dennis Lehane, thank you very much for sharing with us, and best of luck with the new novel. It's just terrific.
Joe, thanks so much for having me.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is World Gone By. It is published by Morrow. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.